tutors, we talked about what was the word, Henry VIII, schism without heresy. With Edward VI, we've got into, from the Roman Catholic point of view, heresy. But as we had the second prayer book, the revised prayer book, you recall the first was two Catholics for the Parliament. The second prayer book became the standard of Church of England, the English Church. And so things are still going back between the Roman, those who want the church to be more Catholic, and those who want to be more Protestant. Flip ahead to page 73. You might want to make reference to that as I talk, to kind of give you a perspective as we go through this lecture mission, but maybe we should do that at the beginning. That is sort of, remember comprehension, territorialism, freedom, and comprehension. This is comprehension. And so you have those who want the church to be as Catholic as possible. You have those in England. Remember, I began by saying that all strains of the Reformation and all the strains of humanism were in England. It was the land of Wycliffe. The writings of Erasmus were there. The writings of Luther, the writings of Calvin, the works of Zwingli were all there. And there were staunch Roman Catholics. How do you have a state church that comprehends all these? Well, you can, of course. But to avoid war, listen to me, the English saw what was happening in Germany. In fact, they were there, part of the 30 Years' War. They didn't want that. Did they want the great slaughter of where Frenchmen slaughtered other Frenchmen by the thousands, the Huguenots, the persecution of the Huguenots? They didn't want that. Did they want a civil war like the Low Countries had? They didn't want that. They didn't want the war like they had in Switzerland. And they didn't want any more civil war in England. And if you divide religions, you have wars. That's the way that the society was. Well, what do you try to do? You try to walk the middle way. And Elizabeth, who came to the throne, remember Anne Boleyn? The one that married after Henry VIII divorced Catherine of Aragon, by the authority of Archbishop Cranmer, that he married Anne Boleyn, lady-in-waiting, but she did not give him a son. You recall that Edward was the son of Henry VIII and Jane Seymour. But he died, and that which Henry had tried to avoid, he's dead now, that which he had tried to avoid became inevitable. That is, if the Tudor, listen to me, if the Tudor line was going to remain on the throne, the family, there had to be a woman and be a queen. Why? He's out of boys. Edward was it. He's dead. So Elizabeth was the son of Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn. And it turned out that Edward's fears were unbounded, that a queen, a woman coming to the throne, could not hold things together. As a matter of fact, Elizabeth did a job that was unsurpassed. She was a great monarch. I mean, in terms of her age and what she had to face. Elizabeth, she brought about what I call here what is called the Elizabethan settlement of what? Of this church-state issue. I list the general character of the settlement. It was studied ambiguity. We're going to see that. What is studied ambiguity? What is ambiguity? I accuse some of the fellows who are neo-orthodox, at least conceptively neo-orthodox in their thinking, when they write books, they will practice. I've accused them of studied ambiguity. What is ambiguity, first of all?
Vague.
Not necessarily vague. Nothing can be vague without being ambiguous.
Being very general.
No, you are touching it. What's an ambidextrous person? They can use either hand, both left-handed and right-handed.
I'll give you a clue.
What is an ambiguity? An ambiguity is something that can be taken at least two ways. And what is studied, see, sometimes you get ambiguities that are accidental. A lot of somebody will say something that's ambiguous, you're not quite sure what they mean. Do they mean this?
It can mean this or it can mean this, maybe something else. But what is studied ambiguity? Yeah, you very carefully word it so that it can be taken two ways or more than one way. So it's not simply vague, but it is carefully constructed to be taken two ways. And comprehension, of course. We look at Elizabeth, England was in turmoil. Listen, remember Bloody Mary, the spires of Smithfield, the death of these leaders in the Church of England, Cranmer included, and the people rejected that. Well, so you had this. England was bordering, was teetering at the edge of war, just like it happened in Germany. And Elizabeth prevented that. We look at the area, the settlement area of government. By the 1559 Act of Supremacy, which she had the Parliament pass, the Church in the past, she was made supreme governor of the Church. Now, and you've read the Supremacy Act, if you're signing. Supreme governor of the Church. But you see, Henry declared himself the head of the Church. Well, who's the head of the Church? Well, Christ is the head of the Church. Or the Pope is the head of the Church. Or the Archbishop, or the King is the head of the Church. You see, what would the Roman Catholics think about their Roman Catholics in England, a lot of them, even especially in high places, what would they stand for their queen being called the head of the Church? No, the Pope is the head of the Church on earth, right? So she was not the head of the Church, she was the governor of the Church. What does that mean? Remember when somebody asked about the Church of England, what is it? Is it Protestant? Yeah, kind of. Sort of. The Catholic, I mean, the manner speaking. You got that? What did Elizabeth do? She made it more, now listen, she made it more Catholic than it had been, a little bit, but not as Catholic as it had been as the first prayer book had been. It's a compromise. The middle way, the Church of the Middle Way. You got that? So, she gave the Catholics something, she gave the Protestants something. The Catholics were saying, we'll never accept the second prayer book. Let's go back to the first. What did she do? She revived the second prayer book. It was a little more Catholic. And so they didn't have to choose between them. So they did have to take the second prayer book as it was, but they did go back to the first prayer book. What's common prayer mean? This is the prayer everybody prays on Sunday. Uniformity of worship. Let's give it a state church. Y'all see that? Now look at this. I put this in. I thought you'd like this. The discrepancies are mine. Here is studied ambiguity. Keep in mind, she is trying to keep peace, harmonize between Catholicism and Protestantism, prevent war. Preserve thy body and soul in everlasting life.
Now, that sounds like transubstantiation. What is the host, the cup and the loaf? It is the body of our Lord Jesus Christ given for thee. Is that transubstantiation? Could be, depending on how you get it, maybe not. In what sense is it the body? Preserve thy body and soul everlasting life. Could a Catholic say that?
Sure. Yeah, a Catholic could say that and mean transubstantiation. Does it necessarily mean transubstantiation? No, it's brief, it doesn't say.
It just says, this is the body, it doesn't say in one sense. Didn't try to say in one sense. Luther made the mistake of saying consubstantiation would not unite with Zwingli, it means this and nothing else. It cost a lot of lives, so it could not unite. This is my body, that's what it said. What does it mean?
Well, you need to make up your own mind, that's what it means.
Did that please all the Catholics? No. Did it please all the Protestants? No. Did it please enough to avoid war? Yes, that's what it was designed to do. Look at this. Take and eat this in remembrance. That's what we say, isn't it? Zwingli, in symbolism, right? In remembrance that Christ died for thee and feed on him. That sounds like Luther. What do you mean, feed on him? In thy heart, by faith and thanksgiving. That's beautiful. That is beautiful. Like, you could be a Roman Catholic, a Zwingli, a Calvinist, and say that at the Lord's Supper, and believe exactly what you're going to believe. Because there was studied ambiguity. In other words, you eat the body of the Lord by faith.
Yeah, what does that mean? You see what I'm saying? It is ingenious.
Ingenious. Example of studied ambiguity. Understand that? She purposely made it that way. Now, did it settle everything? No. They didn't. Things began to shift back and forth. Roman Catholics argued that Elizabeth was not the sovereign of the Church of England, you might expect. Why? Because the Church had never recognized her as being legitimate. Roman Catholics said the Pope never granted a divorce to Catherine of Aragon, Henry VIII and Catherine. Recall that? Therefore, since Elizabeth was born of Anne Boleyn, she was illegitimate. They argued that Mary, Queen of Scots, was the right ruler. And what did Elizabeth do to head that off? Remember when Mary, Queen of Scots, came down? She was forced out of Scotland by the nobles, came down to England. What did she do? Had her executed. Were plotting against her. And now this kind of comes together, doesn't it? You see, Mary, did Elizabeth have a basis of fearing that Mary would be put on the throne and herself killed? Yes, because a very strong Roman Catholic element was pushing for that. And she was French. A seminary was established at Douai in Belgium. In Belgium, and a lot of English Catholic leaders, clergy, priests, went over there and taught, and it was to prepare Englishmen to go there and prepare. You see, Roman Catholic Church, they could not have a Roman Catholic seminary in England, so they had one in exile in Douai, in Belgium, and it was to have a leadership ready when England returned to the Roman Catholic fold, as they expected it to. Later, the seminary. The Bible from the Vulgate to the English. And before that was forbidden. Why did the Roman Catholic Church translate the Bible from the Vulgate to the English? Can't beat them, John. Right, but almost that. That is, they could no longer prevent Before, they made it, it was against church law for the people to have a translation in their own language. Well, that was ancient history, because now the English had a translation. So, since the people had an English Bible, it was, according to the Roman Catholic opinion was, it was too accurate. So they made a translation, not from the Greek, but from the Vulgate. And what's it called today? Douay-Rheims. Ever hear of it? The Douay-Rheims translation? It's called that because the work was done in this seminary, which was at Douay in Belgium at first, and later at Rheims in Spanish Flanders. The Douay-Rheims version is the official Roman Catholic version of the English Bible. It's the one that translates elder and priest, for instance. Why? See, they didn't want to translate the elder, Tyndale's translation. They made it priest. Which really is funny because the priest has to be the husband of one wife. did you all know that? Anyway, how many of you had heard of the Douay-Rheims version? That's why it was called that. And this is why they did it. The Catholic nobles in the north part of England staged a revolt against Elizabeth to try to get rid of her, but the Roman Catholic Church back as the state church, but Elizabeth suppressed it. She was too powerful. Finally, the Pope got around to issuing an interdict of excommunicated, and any Catholic state, therefore, has the right to take her, to go to invade England, take their lands, and you can have their lands, you can have their wealth, if you restore England to its proper place, that is, in the Roman fold. Much like a crusade. Well, then the Pope called on France and Spain to carry out the papal bull. France and Spain were always anxious to attack England. That is, France and Spain constantly waged war on England. And the Pope and the Spanish Armada, the defeat of the Spanish Armada was the end of that. Now, but see, the day was past when Spain was the wonder of the world and could take England. France was more powerful than Spain by now. Maybe after the 30 Years' War, France emerged as the leading world power. You've learned that. But even France no longer. England is no longer the little tiny island state that can't defend itself. No more. The Roman Church tried to infiltrate England. Elizabeth was too smart for everybody. She was quite a lady. And I indicated here the famous Babington plot where Mary, Queen of Scotland, was executed. I've already mentioned that. Finally, this Catholic opposition ended with the defeat of the Spanish Armada. Really now, Spain with its invincible fleet sailed on England to crush this country. This famous Spanish Armada. The combination of ill preparation, a timeless storm. For storms in English, I've read books that said, you know, this is the, hand of God, what may have been, except that the English Channel is a storm of revenge. And the fact that the cumbersome galleons of the Spanish could not maneuver with a lot of English warships led to the defeat of the Armada. Never again would Spain threaten England. But note this, the Spanish Armada sailed but carried out the edict of the Pope. Now let me teach you briefly about the famous battle of the Spanish Armada was defeated. I've missed a couple of them. They defeated because, first of all, a storm decimated the Spanish fleet. It was still pretty strong. Secondly, the Spanish ships were these huge galleons that were designed to sail across the Atlantic Ocean to the New World. A lot of them sunk, you know, Fisher, the guy who was fine on the bottom of the ocean. These huge ocean-going vessels were fine as long as, you heard that they had an old song back in the 50s. Give me 40 acres and I'll turn this truck around. You ever heard it?
Give me 40 acres and I'll turn this truck around.
Anyway. The lake of 40 acres turned around, and on the open sea, they were great. The English Channel was not the open sea. And in a tight battle, where ships move in close, they weren't, you can't, when ships would get close, the smaller, lighter ships, the English ships were smaller and lighter, they could turn quicker, and in a close-in battle, the ship that can turn the quickest has the advantage. That is, a small ship may be heavily outgunned, and the British ships were out. You might as well not have any at all. And they could not put many in tight and close in maneuvering. They could not bring their guns to bear by the time they get around the deep. But then the English ship had moved astern and just slaughtered them. Another reason, which is not in the... by the way, that's how John Paul Jones, remember when the Bonhomme Richard fought the Serapis, American Revolution? And John Paul Jones made the deal, you surrender? He said, sir, I'm not yet begun to fight. You know, even more of its Roman Catholic element. What was the origin? You remember John Knox, minister to several Englishmen to an English congregation in Geneva? Well, they had fled from England to Geneva, and they came back as Puritans. They didn't understand. They wanted the theology of the Church of England, the state church, to be more in line with Reformed theology. It wasn't Catholic, was it? No, not exactly. The Pope said it wasn't. But was it Protestant? No. It would make neither the Pope nor John Calvin happy. Too much in the middle. They said the prayer book is too Catholic, and it was, for their viewpoints. They opposed the elaborate clerical vestment. You go to church, what do you see? What you used to see when we were Catholic. Kneeling at communion? Why? Why would they object to kneeling at communion? Well, it smacks of transubstantiation. It's too much of a sacrifice, not enough of a meal, you see. The sign of the cross. The sacramental, which I studied last quarter, sign of the cross. The English church was still using that. They said, if we're not going to be Catholic, let's quit making the sign of the cross. The use of the ring in the marriage ceremony, believe it or not, they identified that, the use of the ring, as being Roman Catholic. They eventually rejected all liturgical prayer. They objected to the state control of the church. They embraced covenant. Does not hold the state absolute obedience. They emphasized the Bible as a handbook, as Calvin had done. They established a tradition in the English church of objection to the theater, which was pornographic and frivolous, immoral card playing, which was also connected with gambling and dancing. By the way, dancing is connected with sexual immorality. It is, anybody knows anything about that, it is a part of, it is a preamble to sexual intercourse. And then, anybody recognize it as such? The Puritans identified Sunday with the Jewish Sabbath. Remember that came? I taught you that came from on Sunday. Idleness was forbidden. The day was given to public and private worship and devotion. You spent the day in church or family devotions. I can remember the Church of England. This was all from the Presbyterian. Did you realize that the old Presbyterian homes, they had at the turn of the century, and a lot of the Episcopal homes, especially in the East, the children, this tradition was carried on, the children would get dressed in the morning and go to church for a long service, come home and eat lunch, and they would have to stay in their dress-up clothes the rest of the day.
out. They went to the same church. They're in the same service. The separatists begin to meet in separate gatherings.
Now, very often in the beginning, as we're going to see the Wesleyans today, they would, like in the morning, they would go to the state church. In the afternoon or evening, they would go to have their own gathering. Now, you notice I list them here. Baptist, Congregationalists, Quakers, over the line. That means that they were they a part of the state church or not? The answer is yes and no. Understand? They were officially part of the state church, but they met separately. After 1689, the Bill of Rights, which we have not come to yet, then they were completely separate. They were allowed to establish their own congregations. But not until 1689. Y'all see that? So they're separatists. Early on, they're yes and no. Later on, they're completely separate. What was the Anglican reaction, the Church of England, to the Puritans and Separatists? We saw what the reaction was to the Roman Catholic element of the Church. John Whitgift, who was the Archbishop of Canterbury, he resorted to compulsion. He argued for episcopacy, the rule by bishops. Richard Bancroft developed the Anglo-Catholic view of apostolic succession, which they still hold. Peter Barrow represented a leaning toward Arminianism. But anyway, things are very much in turmoil. But there is a reaction. That is, in reaction to the Puritans and the Separatists, those who wanted the church to be more Catholic made it a little more Catholic. Listen to me. Before the Puritans and the Separatists made their noise, the Church of England had no doctrine of apostolic succession. If you do not have apostolic succession, you're not a church. That condition is held, by the way, in England. Roman Catholic Church says you're not a church unless you have an apostolic succession. You understand that? The Episcopal Church says the same thing. You have to have a succession to be the church. Therefore, the Episcopal Church will say the Roman Catholic Church is a church. We are a church, but the Baptists are not a church. That tradition is held, was dying up to recent times. Yet in England, it's still pretty much true. In England, if you say, I'm going to the church, they understand you to mean the Church of England. And other groups tend not to be called churches. One time, none of them were. You got that? It would be a chapel or an assembly or something different than a church. You understand that? Because that's what we're talking about. Was Elizabeth cowardly in her compromise, in her celibacy, in her stated ambiguity? Well, I put in here what Roland Bain says about it. He says, the stated ambiguities of the Elizabethan celibate can easily be exposed and readily scorned. Right? They were compromisers. But were they, after all, a less satisfactory solution of the strife of religion of religions than the blinding clarity of the fires of Smith? Do you get what Bain was saying? He says you can look at the via media, the stated ambiguities, you could easily hold them up to scorn. They could take either way. It's easy to look at the Church of England and laugh at it and say, why, it's neither Catholic nor Protestant. Bunyan says, though things were not clear, but he says, was it really not better than the blinding clarity? The issues in Germany were clear. What did you have? War. Under Bloody Mary, it was clear, but you had 300 people die.
You get what Bateman is saying? Bateman is saying that while it's true that you can easily point out the compromise and call it cowardly, so as a matter of fact, England did not erupt in religious war.
Thank you.
It's outdated. It's got a couple of defects. One is that King James, what often, you know, I heard radio preachers pull out for the original King James. Unfortunately, they've got it not been revised six times. The original, we call it the original King James, was revised six times. It was the original. But unfortunately, as soon as it came from the press in 1611, it was out of date as far as. Even as it was being translated. But the King James, given its context, the work, the translating work on it, forgetting about the manuscripts, the translating work was pretty good work. They were Calvinistic, too Calvinistic in many ways, but they're the ones who gave us baptism. Well, the English, some of the early English translations, let's see. Church of England, the elevated heretics in the Church of England. The only ones who were immersing for who? The Anabaptists. What were they doing to the Anabaptists? They were drowning them. Can you imagine here they're drowning the Anabaptists all over Europe, and you get this major. So they couldn't translate it. Why didn't they? Now that the Church of England was practicing pouring, not sprinkling, but pouring. Why didn't they translate it that? It doesn't mean that. So they knew, in other words, they couldn't translate it immersed, couldn't translate it at all, because it would just create a chaos, unbelievable chaos. But they couldn't translate it in terms of what they were doing. It did not mean immersion. They would have translated into what it did mean, and rather transliterate the word is.
Really funny to hear these guys, they'll get on there and they'll just blast everybody as being ungodly.